You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome. Welcome, welcome. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. And you are walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. And my email is dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. Well, today is All Souls Day, and this is a huge, deep day. I don't know if I ever, in fact, I almost didn't remember it was All Souls Day. And when I thought about the Day of the Dead yesterday and thinking about, I don't know what hit me this morning, but I thought, you know, I think All Souls Day is close. And of course, it was today. So that's great because I will go to Mass later and it will make it much more meaningful to me. But then in just a few seconds, it hit me so strongly about All Souls. So we're going to get into a little bit about souls, about our departed, our deceased relatives, friends, people, saints. We'll talk a little bit about that. We're also going to talk about the Day of the Dead. It was so interesting because I was walking last year with a friend of mine who is a very strong Christian, at least that's how they declare themselves, very good person. And I'm not sure because I don't know, but there's all these different churches. So each church might be a little bit different. I don't know whether they would, they're not Pentecostal. Maybe they'd be more considered evangelical. Maybe not, but they're not like Lutheran or Methodist or Anglican. And so we're walking and there's this beautiful, beautiful old home. Actually, it was a home of one of an early settler, very Catholic person. And I think at least one of the couple of the family that owned it way back in the 1800s was Mexican, was from Mexico. And every year they have a beautiful Day of the Dead celebration, a very authentic Day of the Dead. They have the little table altars lined up. They have just all kinds of festivities. And the person I was walking with said, oh, no, I never go. I said, oh, this is awesome. We should go. No, I never go. And I said, why? Because it's of the devil. And I said, no, it's not. And they said, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, they have skulls and things like that. And that's going to be another topic someday if you all remind me, because I saw the most awesome rosary and it had little skulls as beads. And there was an entire dissertation along with other rosaries. It was from a rosary maker. The beauty and the meaning of the skulls in Catholicism and in Christianity. So anyway, but I knew something very different, and I knew it from who turned out to be my daughter-in-law from Mexico City. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and I am not an expert on Day of the Dead at all, but in that one time that I was there when she first came into my life, and I watched her do and make an altar, and I watched her with all this, what the beans were for and what the particular flowers were for, and then what we did and what we had to do in preparation for that particular day. It is really beautiful. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. I am going to talk about generational healing, which is a great day to talk about it because it is the Day of the Dead yesterday and it is All Souls Day today. I also will finish up a little bit about the article I was talking about yesterday and to clarify something that someone asked me about. They asked me a bit about, well, they asked me directly to explain a little bit more about why I would pray for someone or how I could pray for someone who was diametrically opposed to me. And acknowledge that I mentioned that it could sound sarcastic. And I want to address that too, because it was not sarcastic. And I do want to address it in this form. Way back, many of you that have been with me for years, since 2004, 5 or 6 or somewhere around there, when we were a terrestrial radio station, the beginning thing that I did with who is now our CEO, Leo Brown, was chapter by chapter of The Devout Life. We just did it. We just read it, talked about it. One of the things that St. Francis de Sales mentioned about gossip and the death of a reputation was the backhanded, the offering to pray for somebody, but doing it in a sarcastic manner. And I won't do that. That just isn't something I will do. To the best of my ability or knowledge, I can't say I never did it. I don't even, you know, how would I even recall that at this point? But all I know is this. When I said that, here is my message. I mentioned to you that the circumstances and the committees and the meetings and things like that that I'm involved with, that I know in my heart, at least as of right this minute, will help women who are in any stage of their life, will help them, whether they've been abused or not. But it will really help women who have been abused, who have been mentally abused, emotionally abused, and for fathers and mothers to help them understand so that they will raise their girls and their daughters with certain things in mind for themselves. But mainly, it will hopefully reach out to those who have that kind of abuse that gains no sympathy in the world, has the kind of abuse where there are no broken bones or there are no bruises in the face, but almost the kind that St. Francis of Sales talks about. So there is a woman who is very opposed to letting the truth be known. And yes, it's her job. But what I pray, and I mentioned to you as well, that they had been listening to my programs, which I thought in a way was, hey, that's kind of awesome. Maybe I have two listeners now. There's one, and I'm not sure who that is, but it might be my producer, because half the time she's probably not listening. And the other thing, and I love you, Jennifer. I really don't mean that as a slight at all. She's got lots of work to do. And the other might be this person, you know, so yay, I got another listener. Awesome. But there may be something. I always say my prayer from the very beginning, from the days of the terrestrial station, I have said, if I have, especially the one I first started with, the first one I started with, which was not the one that I'm currently affiliated with, it was tiny, and literally you had to stand on a couch with a radio and some tinfoil to be able to even hear it in your own, like 5 feet away from the station. So it was really tiny. And I thought, if I took the words of the veterans I worked with when I did a little film about them, and when they finally agreed to allow me to film them, they said, if what you do helps one doctor help one veteran, we're in. And so they were in, because they were very opposed to it. So my whole thing always has been, if I can help one person with one sentence at any time. But my prayer for this woman, because she's a woman, is that I pray that she does not experience, or that her daughters do not experience, or her sisters, or anyone in her family, never have or never will experience the things that I have heard, the things I have seen, and the things I have witnessed. Some of the things that none of you will ever No, and in a way, it's a privilege, but it is also a burden. There are many people, many of us as residents, when we worked in the children's ward, who would have to sit around and debrief because it is so painful. And so many of us would cry. Or one of the who's probably a fabulous, I don't know her now, psychiatrist in residency, she said, I have dreams. I wake up and I hear their screaming. So, you know, I pray that none of that touches her life, that she never has to endure the things that I've seen. And so that's what I pray. And if she listens to this program, is listening to this program now, know that I mean that sincerely. This is what I pray, that you never endure the things that you would help not come to light. So, because some of these things aren't easy to see or spot, and they happen behind closed doors. We'll take up some of this other stuff, but some of the more beautiful things as well of life. That's why God gives us our hummingbirds and our flowers and our moments of angels that we run into, because, you know, life is pretty darn hard sometimes, but we have some beautiful things too. Our traditions are amazing. And today is All Souls Day, and we get to pray and we get to ponder. We get to reflect. We get to think. And I hope many of you, I did not this year, but I hope many of you were able to celebrate or at least see celebration of Day of the Dead, because it is also very beautiful. We'll also talk about some generational healing and some prayers and some other very upbeat things too. This is Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Oh, welcome, welcome. Welcome back. I hope you got your coffee, looked out your window. If you're in a cold place, that you got nice and cozy and warm. If you're driving, then keep your mind on the road, please. And no matter what you're doing, that you're walking with me on this road, because we all have same song, different verse, more or less of certain things. Okay, so let's wrap up from this concept because of the slippery slope that has been talked about in a cliche way, but is shown on MRIs actually to affect different areas of the brain. But, you know, I got a little distracted because as I was getting the, as I was pulling this up, one of the articles, this was not the scientific journal, there was just articles about the scientific journal, was saying that something like maybe dishonesty is all about your brain, like your, and then said, you, did your brain make you do it? Maybe it really did. And so, oh my gosh, you can just see down the road, right? You can just see what could happen. Turning this a complete about face with getting this information to give us some information and depth scientifically into what we all know, but now that it could be turned almost as an excuse. So we don't want to go there. But what we want to do is say that when, and I think the take-home message, especially in talking about the woman who asked, well, what about the abusive relationship where her husband was very mentally and emotionally abusive and he left her? And why would he do that if she was so subdued at that point? And this was her asking it. And so there are reasons for that, because just as the brain changes with every deceit, and you know this in, remember I talk about the bell curve a lot? I talk about the fact that on each side, most of us fit under the big part of the bell curve. And then on one end are the absolute untouched, and the others are the worst of the worst of the worst. So if you look at this continuum, if you look at the very extreme examples that we see sometimes in our politicians or even serial killers or whatever, where they really are lacking, they can pass polygraph tests because they don't register any kind of change. They're not uncomfortable with their lie or what they've done. There is no change in their heart rate or their emotion or anything. These people walk among us. They do exist. They may cry, but that's where we got the idea of crocodile tears, because crocodiles sometimes have moisture coming from their eyes, but it's not really tears or crying, you know. And so you have this situation where they've learned, they study crying, these people. They study it. They study what it does to other people. And so they use it as their own tool. And ask any person who works in a prison, or many psychiatrists see this as well. So they use it as a tool. They can use it as a tool. So that's at the extreme. And a lot of people, even if you are get into the habit, you don't necessarily end up becoming that person, but you know, in the news where they say all the time that the person continues on this pathway and they graduate to the next levels. So in like manner, we can do the same things. And again, a lot of times this is intentional. This is something that, you know, when you do something, we're human, you have a venial sin, you have a white lie, or you lie and you go to confession. It's not the same, because you have the response. This is a beauty. I would love for them, but no one's going to fund it. I would love for them to study what happens with confession in the brain, because what you're doing is you're restoring your ability to respond to emotional cues. This is what that study said that I was talking about yesterday. I said I would finish up today. What the study said is that people who intentionally lie, and a lot of times it happens in addicts as well, alcoholics, because not only are they changing their brain chemically, and their brain is actually getting poisoned by the products that are coming off of their liver. That's how that works. And also it goes to certain centers of the brain. And that's why people vomit a lot when they drink, because they're poisoning themselves, or you can die from alcohol poisoning. So we are putting in a chemical thing in your brain that's changing that structure as well. But they have to, they must deceive in order to keep their addictions. It just, there's no two other ways about it. It would be the rare person that would say, I have an addiction, and let's stop here while I fulfill my addiction. And, you know, it's going to be that rare person. So, and they have to lie to others, their spouses, their children, their mother, their father, their work, their employer. And we also go to accept a lot of lies as well, because we kind of accept that now in our culture, that our politicians are going to lie. That's just part of being a politician. You got to lie. So it is a very difficult thing to define, but I would love to see a study for the brain at confession, because what you're doing is you're resetting that you didn't think it was okay, and then go to the next one and the next one. You do something and you go, oh, that wasn't right. I did it, you know, however. And then you go to confession. You have the examination of conscience, where you bring it out on the table, conscience, and you bring it out on the table. You look at it. And then you go to not only confess, because remember, we say all these things. It's not because I'm afraid of you, God. It's because I offended God, and God is love. So I offended love by this lie, or by this action, by this impurity, by this betrayal, by whatever. So you are not then stuffing it and making your brain tell you it was okay. So I would love to see if the same thing would happen for someone who goes to confession regularly and means it. I would think that that would help a person, because in confession also is the expectation that you're going to sin no more. You're going to do the error no more. You're going to do what you can to change it. And most priests, or many, I'm not going to say most, many priests who are good with confessors will try to get that person, if they hear the same person there in their parish, to go get help, to go get therapy, to not betray their family, to not betray them, to get the help that they need, or get addiction help, or whatever it could be. So I hope that we're kind of getting the idea here. So the other thing, again, just to wrap up with the woman who I hope is listening, who's asking about her husband leaving, what is that as they are changing to where their deceit continues to be embedded, imprinted, cemented into reality, they also, for survival mechanisms, the abused begins to acquiesce, begins to, it's a very typical abusive situation. And how do I modify myself? Because I must be doing something wrong to get my husband to stop drinking, or my husband to stop raging, or my whatever it could be. So that person who asked the question, the woman, of course, because the idea is that it's not about to the person who's doing the abusing. It's not about that. It's about you and them. The person is a runaway train. The person is believing their own deceits. And in order to keep that deception up and to be abusive and controlling, you must be minimized. You must be seen as less than. That's just the way that they do it. You have to minimize them, demean them, just discount them, discredit them. So this oftentimes is what happens. So it is not unusual, and it is not uncommon for the abuser to leave the situation because they feel so empowered. They cannot tell the difference in themselves. To them, they're doing no wrong. So, and even though with you, a lot of people with empathy fit hand in glove with a disordered character. I referred, oh gosh, last 2 years ago, maybe, to George Simon's book, PhD book, In Sheep's Clothing. And he calls it a character disturbance. And he talks a lot about that. I think there were either 5 or 10 characteristics. I refer you back to that book again, 5 or 10 characteristics of people who happen to end up in these relationships or actually dovetail with this kind of character disturbance, because they either over intellectualize and think that if the person just figures it out, or if they go to therapy, it's going to be okay, or they're used to the abuse themselves, or if they change themselves enough, or they buy into the person can't help it. And so that drags on many, many years of your life. So I that might be a little vague. If you need more, please email me again, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can ask me that question. And then when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about a little bit about fear and some of the upsides of fear, what fear can tell you about yourself. We're also going to talk a little bit about courage. We're going to talk a little bit about wisdom and how you can incorporate that in your daily life. But I want to talk about souls, All Souls Day, and Day of the Dead. And we're going to do some of that when we come back from the break. So I also want to, I want to talk a bit about generational healing as well, and why that could be a really wonderful thing. Get your coffee, look out the window, and I will see you on the other side of the break.
Like what you hear on Dr. Michelle Live, please consider supporting the show by becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click friend of the show to provide your support today. Thank you. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
I am your host, Dr. Michelle. I hope you got your coffee, your tea, your water. I drank some water. My voice might sound a little funny over the break myself, and it went down the wrong way and I started coughing. So I may not hit the mute button fast enough. In fact, I think I'm going to hit it now. All right. So let's talk a little bit about today. Today is All Souls Day. Now, I know so many of you are aware, but I wasn't aware, or at least I forgot, if I was aware, that was one of the parting ways with Martin Luther, was this concept of the souls, the All Souls Day, the a lot of the Protestant sects that branched off after that. When they translated the Bible, they omitted many of the things that talked about the souls, talked about communication with the souls, talked about being able to pray for the souls, because the thought was that, and the thought is, you go directly to God, you go directly to Jesus, and that's it. You don't pray for the souls. The souls are there. They don't believe in purgatory, I guess. And it was funny because the same person I talked about in section one, or our first session, on our first segment, also, when I would mention a book of the Bible, they'd say, well, there's no book of that Bible in the Bible. And I'd say, well, yeah, sure. And then that's the Catholic Bible. And I said, it doesn't say Catholic Bible, but okay. And I obviously I'm not the best scholarly Catholic, but I really didn't have a clue that some of them were gone. I have heard different Protestant preachers' talks using some of the books that evidently have been taken out of some of the more Protestant versions of the Bible. I guess there are seven books that were that referred to the prayers for the dead, and they were taken out. They were omitted when Martin Luther translated the Bible in the beginning of into German. So he just left those out. So anyway, regardless of that whole historical happening, the fact is, it's a very beautiful thought and very beautiful tradition. But I want to take it a little different step, because I want to talk about generational healing and in conjunction with All Souls. I look at All Souls and I think, what a beautiful time to be, to almost approach it the way that I experienced the Day of the Dead when I was introduced to it. And I know it's not really for the same purpose, but I see nothing for me. I understand the purpose to pray for the souls, that they may have a quick transition through purgatory, pray for their healing. And I think it's a very beautiful thing. And I think it's very essential, because healing is cleansing, and cleansing is freeing. And freeing is what we are all looking for inside and outside. I will get to also a particular book that a young priest who just really became a priest lent to me, and I found it very fascinating, and mentioning generational healing as well. So in All Souls Day, let me start first with Day of the Dead. I'm getting all the dead souls all mixed up, so I'm kind of jumbling my words. So hang in with me. My very first Day of the Dead, my daughter-in-law, who was not my daughter-in-law there, Gabriella, was up in the States, and she was with my son, and he lived in this little tiny apartment, and she was there, and there was not much furniture, but there was like this dark buffet type table. And one day, she was saying, we want to get ready for the Day of the Dead. So she found these the most beautiful. You've all seen them. They're like bigger than life-size cutouts of some of the skeletons and wedding dresses and hats and all that. And she had some painted skulls. But she then had a particular flower. She said this is the traditional flower, and she was able to get it through a Mexican shop in the Midwest. And she had some certain beans, and they had their own symbolic meaning. And then she said, it was just beautiful. It was so artistic and so beautiful. And so then she asked me to get pictures of people from my side of the family that I had that had been deceased, and to get to think of something they particularly loved. So, you know, I thought about it, and I got a picture of my brother and a picture of my niece and a picture of my grandfather and my grandmother and my anyone I could think of. I didn't have a lot. And she had pictures from people on her side of the family. And so what you do is you put out their pictures on this altar type situation. I'm calling it an altar. And then we put out their favorite things. Lot of favorite things, so that their favorite food, and she would prepare the food and put the food out. And then if they liked whiskey, we would get a little shot glass and put a little whiskey in it. If they, like my niece loved horses, and she a couple other things, so we put out little pictures of horses. My brother was a musician. My brother was a composer. He also liked brandy and all these different things. So we would bring them out and put them out, anything that we knew. So there was food, there was drink, there were pictures, there were items, there were musical instruments, just anything you could think of that this person, when they were on earth, enjoyed, loved, was part of them, part of what you remembered. So we set this all out, and that in itself was so beautiful and therapeutic, because some of these deaths had been rather tragic. And if you look at pictures, I had a book once of the Day of the Dead, and you look at pictures of, 100 some years ago in Mexico, you'll see a lot of families with their babies. And we did that here with babies who had died, because babies died so often back then, after they were 1 or 2 years of age even. And we would also see, you'd see so many different beautiful things. There's dancing, there's all kinds of stuff. And then I wasn't part of this part of it. But what the preparation did was it caused you to not just remember them and their souls and where they were going, or feel sad they were gone, but it celebrated the life that they shared with you. And even in just getting these little things, getting the little pictures of ponies or this or that, it was so beautiful and healing. It brought them back. It brought a fullness. It brought them back. It brought not just their being missed or the sadness that they were gone and expressing the love that had stopped. It was an ongoing thing, that part of all that they loved and enjoyed was part of you. So I was not part of the next step, which is the actual step on the Day of the Dead. This is where my son and my daughter-in-law, directed by my daughter-in-law, I think at a certain time at night, they sat down on a rug in front of this little preparation that of everybody, and they sit there in a feeling and in the presence of celebration, and they invite everybody that they have to their party. Basically, they invite them in and they celebrate with them. They celebrate all night. And it is a very beautiful, 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 beautiful thing. Now, there may be lots of details about this that I don't know. This was my experience on my very first exposure. Although I knew about it, I'd read about it, I had books about it because I found it very fascinating. This was my very first real exposure, and I found it so incredibly beautiful. I'm just absolutely enthralled. Here in Southern California at the missions, the Basilica, and also Mission San Luis Rey, They have a huge celebration. You have to take buses to get there from the high school because it is so filled of the Day of the Dead. And then today, and hopefully I'll be able to get there and make it in time after my program, to have Mass then, of course, on All Souls Day. So I find that completely enriching because this mission, these missions were built by Father Junipero, now Saint Junipero Serra. And there's a huge Mexican tradition here, obviously. So anyway, it's a very, very beautiful thing. We'll begin our talk then to wind this into the, I want to call it the Day of the Souls now, but All Souls Day, and our prayers for them, and some of the recent thoughts I've had since, as you all know, there have been a couple of deaths of very, very important people to me in the last month. So we'll get to some of that when we get back from the break. And we will get into this book called The Healing of Families, How to Pray Effectively for Those Stubborn Personal and Familial Problems. It was just given to me to take a look at by a young priest, and it is actually very appropriate to talk about that today on All Souls Day, thinking about our ancestors, and as the day after Day of the Dead. So get your coffee, get your water, your tea, look out your window, enjoy God's nature. Be back with you in just a minute.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
I am Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call, you can email anytime you want, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. You can also become a friend of the show by logging on to breadboxmedia.com. So I am stumbling over these words because yesterday was Day of the Dead. Today is All Souls. So I'm calling it Day of the Souls, All Dead. So anyway, we get the picture. So in All Souls, according to Catholic.org, it is Catholic. It's a holy day. It's set aside for honoring the dead. We honor the dead. So it's not just about wailing and gnashing of teeth type of thing. We pray for the dead. We honor them. It's primarily celebrated in the Catholic Church. And actually, though, the Eastern Orthodox Church started celebrating it earlier than the Eastern Orthodox rather than the Roman Catholic. The Anglican Church actually is Protestant, and it celebrates it. So we kind of have this little bit of a meshing here. So according to the Catholics, the soul of a person who dies can go to one of three places: heaven, if he dies in a state of perfect grace, communion with God, the second is hell, who die in a state of mortal sin and are condemned by their own choices, because they, whatever between this life and the next, and they just say, nope, I like what I did, I'm sticking to it. And then the intermediate is purgatory, which is thought to be where you're kind of free of mortal sin and you're not sticking with that. But you have these other offenses. You got to be purified. It's like anytime you have a beautiful necklace that came from some kind of metal in the ground, you've got to purify it. So we pray, but we also honor. There's many biblical, we don't need to go into the history of all that, because that's not where I'm going with this today. But it does commemorate the faithful departed. It the people who we know And you know what? Even if, and a lot of people get confused about this, and I'm not getting to this theological part. We'll leave that for the priest to talk on the Catholic shows. But whoever your family is, a lot of people are so worried and so scared because they weren't Catholic when they died. Well, God is a big God, okay? God is a big God. And you don't know what goes on in the soul between now and and eternity. You don't know what, God has no time. So you don't know what kind of conversations they have as their bodies are expiring, as we think they're dead. We used to think people were dead all the time. And that's why they had those little bells outside of coffins, because oftentimes they weren't. So, you know, we have more sophisticated machinery to tell us when they are, when they aren't. But I want to get this generational healing before we have to go today, because it's the perfect day. So this book is called The Healing of Families, How to Pray Effectively for Those Stubborn Personal and Familial Problems by Father, and this, I'm going to butcher the name and I apologize, Father, Semakula. And he is, a priest, or he is a priest right now. He was born in Uganda. He was ordained in the priesthood in 93 in Uganda. He started to become part of the first evangelization effort in Darfur, Sudan, for 10 years. And then I think right now he is in the States. He's in Tallahassee, Florida. And at one point, he's a PhD student of clinical psychology. So he is a pretty awesome and prolific person. So he writes this book out of all of his experiences. So I'm just going to give you a little idea, and I want you to connect this if we don't have time to do it on the program today. As you're reflecting when you go to Mass, or if you've been to Mass, or you're reflecting on your ancestors, remember to look at it even in the terms of the Day of the Dead. We're all a continuum. There's a procession of saints. We are souls, and we are spiritual beings. So here's what he says. He says in his first chapter, he says, human healing and the human spirit. He says, healing has never stopped fascinating the human person since human beings first inhabited the earth, but is not only human concern. Animals too are concerned. Besides taking your animals to the veterinary or to the vet, even animals in the wild have their own ways of obtaining healing the best they can. That helps us understand that it is not just a fascinating question. It is our simple and pure survival that is at stake. Humans have known a lot of natural medicines for millions of years. However, with the addition of education and technology, many people today have lost a lot of personal knowledge about healing. What used to be known by everybody has become limited to those who specialize. It's like dancing. At one time, all primitive peoples danced, and everybody grew up dancing. They didn't learn it. In this day and age, people take dancing lessons because some people have become specialized dancers, while others fell out. This is what has happened to healing. Now, when we get sick, the first thing we naturally think of is going to a doctor who knows our bodies more than we do in this world of privacy. Well, how about my part? This is my body, after all. If healing is so important for us human beings, guess what it will be for God who made us? One big mistake we normally make is to think that it, quote unquote, whatever it is, begins with us. No, it never begins with us. It begins with God. We are always at the other end of it. Therefore, seeing how important healing is to our human life, you can bet it is even more so for the God who made us, because God made us and it. If it is important to God, then it must be in the Bible, right? A quick browse through the Bible concordance reveals that between the words healing, healed, health, and heal, this topic is mentioned at least 110 times. The word physician occurs 5 times. And for the word cure, we find 15 entries. In the Old Testament book of Sirach, chapter 38, we have almost an entire chapter about the physician and healing, and how we should respect him in his work, and how he himself turns to God in order to make good diagnoses of other people's illnesses. Many Christians may not have heard of this passage in the Bible. But let us get this straight. Jesus gets a huge following as he walks the land of Israel because he heals people. All right, so for lack of time, We're going to get into then the generations a little bit here. And it's really important because he talks about using everything. Maybe I'll hit this tomorrow a little bit more. And he says that, so what are the types of healing we're looking at? He says all types, physical, psychological, emotional, and even spiritual. People normally think much less about spiritual healing, or if they do, they think of it in the line of the sacrament of confession, which it is, but not exclusively. We can also think of it as those good things and endeavors, spiritual or not, that you have set yourself to do many times or even made strong resolutions about, but which for many years down the line, you've not done, failed to do, or failed miserably at each time you do it. So he talks about this more holistic viewpoint of spirituality. Then when he talks about having to go to families, he basically says that because it doesn't start with you, and I'll just paraphrase now because we only have 3 minutes, because it doesn't start for you, it starts in a line. He says sickness comes to us because the general human condition affected by sin and our own sin is goes down through the generations. He said there are two things involved, our general fallen human condition plus our freedom. Once you hear freedom, pay attention. We're also close to the human sovereign domain. We're not even God treads. So in other words, we have an ability to pick up our bootstraps and walk ourselves through a lot of these things with God's help. So when he talks about the healing of families, he's laying down the groundwork that healing is an important thing and that it is generational. And what a beautiful, well, maybe we'll start going into this a little bit more for the rest of this week, because we can kick it off with All Souls Day. Isn't it beautiful to talk about the feelings and the families, even people that you never, never knew? Because it is about the principalities in life and the generational lines. Jesus had a generational line. He just did. He had an earthly generational line. And it took a lot of generations, as we see in the Old Testament, a lot of generations for Jesus to be Jesus. But we talk a lot also about the trauma and the generational fear. Remember what I said in the beginning of the program? Part of the work that I hope in the future will help all these other women out there and men as well comes from the generational pain, suffering, trauma, and illness. It is not a far stretch. People use it as an excuse again. They do an about face, but it's not a far stretch. We take it as conventional wisdom now that most abusers themselves were abused. If they were mentally abused, they learn how to do it. If they were physically abused, they find a way to do it. Not everybody, and people oftentimes even who vow not to do it end up being abusers themselves. But many of them say, this will never happen to me, and they start on their road. But first we have to acknowledge it does come through lines, but all goodness comes through lines as well. So today for All Souls Day, begin that pondering. Have a beautiful day. Look at it very holistically and add a little nature in it as well. I am Dr. Michelle. See you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.